Hello, in this podcast we are going to be talking about the UK economy and the global economy, and all in the context of this highly uncertain coronavirus and domestically changes also in the Treasury ahead of what should be a big and important budget. So never a dull moment in the gilt market, and to cap it all,
what causes inflation seems to have changed.
So to find out how, please make sure you stay tuned after the following messages.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation, which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everybody, welcome to another Brewin podcast with me, Guy Foster. I'm the head of research at Brewin Dolphin, and we're going to be looking forward to an exciting year in the world of UK public finances and borrowing and things like that with David Hooker, who is the manager of the Insight UK Gilt Strategy. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Let's start off with just sort of in general terms. Can you like give an impression of your outlook for maybe the global economy first?
Yes, certainly. As we entered 2020, I think it's fair to say Insight was feeling a bit more optimistic about the global economy. Some of the key indicators that we look at, the so-called PMI surveys, on a global basis, suggested that the downturn in economic activity that we'd seen, certainly during the first half, the first three quarters of 2019, was beginning to ease. To use a phrase that those of the older generation will know, the green shoots of recovery.
Oh, yes.
Were beginning to be seen in some of the Asian PMI surveys, suggesting that manufacturing was beginning to bottom and actually slightly pick up as trade tensions ease between China and the US. Obviously, there have been a lot of interest rate cuts also during 2019 from various central banks. So as we entered 2020, we effectively had a smiley face, looking quite optimistic. US obviously still leading the way, 2% plus growth there. Central banks remaining in easy policy, but not necessarily cutting rates any further, largely because inflation itself looks to be very well contained. So low inflation allows central banks to run looser policy for longer. One or two governments are thinking about looser fiscal policy, specifically here in the UK. And we just felt that some of the pent-up demand that we felt was in the economy over the last 6 to 9 months was actually going to translate into higher investment spending and higher growth.
So do you use phrases like Goldilocks? Is that sort of was that appropriate for your view of the 2020?
It's another old phrase.
We like cliches in the podcast.
Goldilocks wasn't necessarily mentioned, but certainly it's a good way to describe it. If you're a central bank, you've been worried about undershooting your inflation target over a number of years now. If you think about the Fed, it's going through a policy review, specifically looking at its inflation remit. The ECB are doing something similar. Again, why has inflation been as low as it has? What can we as a central bank do about that in the future? So yes, if you like, the porridge is not too hot. Growth is coming through quite nicely. Central banks can be quite relaxed and they can see how economies run.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll come back to that point about the central banks and the bias of their policy. But I can't help noticing that you described all of that in a kind of, we did feel this. Am I detecting correctly? Is it possible that you don't have the same outlook now?
We still have the same outlook, but clearly the coronavirus has, shall we say, coloured that outlook somewhat.
Right.
And certainly put some dark clouds into what was, relatively speaking, a nice, bright, sunny forecast. The problem with the coronavirus is not that it's been particularly lethal, but the coronavirus is creating a lot of uncertainty. It's creating a lot of economic dislocation. So if you've been in China, you've effectively been locked down for large parts of the last month. And now, over the weekend, we're beginning to see the same thing happen areas like northern Italy.
Mm.
And this is potentially very disruptive. The uncertainty affects business confidence. The lack of people going to do their job affects goods being produced, can affect supply chains. And again, can you actually produce the products that you want to, given all the dislocation that's occurring? And that does have the potential to slow economic growth, and at worst, bring us back to thinking about recession again.
And so are you beginning to get any kind of impression of about how significant this is from an economic perspective?
At this stage, it's still too early to tell. We are just beginning to see some of the early data releases from the Asian region. But to get a true picture, we need to wait a bit longer. What we are worried about at the moment as markets is what if? What if this continues? What if this gets bigger? And it's the fear, it's the uncertainty that's driving markets at the moment, rather than the hard economic data. The hard economic data we're seeing still predates the worst of the virus. Clearly, it's not going to be so good in the next 4 to 6 weeks. But for now, we're worried about the spread.
So Monday this week, and the stock market experienced a bit of possibly the first real signs of concern over this, since the early signs anyway. Have you been surprised by the market reaction? I suppose to get more towards your area of expertise, has the bond market priced this uncertainty well? Or?
Bond markets, sir, would trying up until about a couple of weeks ago, we're trying to look a little bit more optimistic. So it appears that the Chinese have been able to contain the virus. Ex-China, the numbers were at least slowing or remained very, very low. So equity markets had rallied back from the falls that we saw initially. Bonds had given back some, not all of their gains. Clearly, that's all changed in the last 48, 72 hours. Equity markets are very weak. And in this environment, bond assets are seen as a safe haven. So bond markets are not necessarily reacting to the fact that central banks may need to ease policy yet or keep rates lower. They are literally just looking at what's happening in equity markets, and we are the safe haven. Equities are clearly in trouble, and there'll be flows into that safe haven. So that's what you're seeing at the moment. Maybe we need to think further about the economic outlook if this was to continue.
Now, I want to talk a bit about your outlook for the UK economy, which would be a subject, I suppose, closer to lots of our hearts. But just before we get there, what is it that really matters to you as a gilt investor? Is it what's happening in the broader world, or is it what's happening domestically?
Many years ago, you would sit here and gilts would be in splendid isolation, doing their own thing, ignoring treasuries, ignoring German bonds. That's no longer the case. The gilt market is well integrated into the global bond environment, and it is the key driver of UK yields. That's not to say that UK policy or fiscal or monetary is not important, but your key driver is the global environment. And then really, if you like, you're taking yourself as a spread, a yield spread, i.e. off global government bond market. So looking at the UK, the UK in many respects mirrors what we saw in the global economy. Going through Q4 last year, we saw very weak data. So
yeah.
Talk about the Bank of England perhaps having to cut interest rates, the Brexit deadlines, yes, that old chestnut. And of course, we had a general election. So uncertainty, would it be Conservative? Would it be a hung parliament? Would it be Labour? Very, very different policy outcomes from those three alternatives. As it was, we got a stable government from a large Conservative majority. The Brexit deadline passed without incident. And so some of the uncertainty that's impacting the UK economy from a domestic point of view, coupled with improved trade tensions between China and the US, so some of the rolling back of tariffs, saw the UK data improve, as did we see improved data elsewhere. We're still seeing that improved data. The Bank of England held rates at its last meeting and took a more neutral approach to the future, waiting to see if the improvement we've seen in some of the survey data, rather than the hard economic numbers, would actually translate into the hard economic data. And that's where we are now. So up until now, things were looking reasonably buoyant for the UK. The question is, does the uptick in the number of incidents of the virus impact that? And that's effectively what bond markets are now beginning to weigh up.
So we've got 10-year government bond yields in the sort of 50 basis points, 0.5% kind of area. And obviously interest rates, short-term interest rates, Bank of England base rate, significantly above that for now. Is that telling that the most logically that we are going to see some interest rate cuts according to the market?
As we sit here where we stand now, yes, that's exactly the case. If you'd wound the clock back 2 weeks, the market was much less certain about where Bank of England rate was going. You think about beginning of the year, the market expected the rates to be cut. After the meeting and the good data we had for a couple of weeks afterwards, we got back to a much more balanced outlook, or at least unchanged outlook for UK rates. Now, with this latest uptick in the virus, we're looking at potential for rate cuts again. And of course, when you actually think about some of the reasons the Bank of England indicators to why they may want to cut rates, low inflation, relatively weak growth, uncertainty, they do remain valid concerns.
And we had the purchasing managers' indices on Friday, and generally they seemed to suggest that Europe and the UK were making some progress in, I guess, that sort of insights initial prognosis for the year. There seemed to be some progress. And you seem to have, by contrast, in the US, a bit more of a slowdown and some mentions of coronavirus in there. Like, naturally, I think we would believe that the German economy is very, very exposed to China. But is this telling us something different of the relationship of these different regions to China and the coronavirus?
I think we just need to take a step back. We have to remember that the European PMIs and the British PMI were very weak as we went through Q4.
Yeah.
And yes, we've seen a sharp bounce back, but only to kind of levels that the US were really printing. So yes, from a month-on-month estimate, the US data looked a little weak. But when you actually look at the absolute number, I think Europe and the UK would be very happy to consistently print those kind of levels going forward. And economic growth in the US does look more firm and more established than perhaps Europe or the UK at this stage. We are looking for those two blocks, if you like, to move up towards the US level.
So it's more like a sort of convergence rather than, even though they're moving in different directions, they're actually moving towards a similar sort of level.
I'd paint the US economy as effectively flatlining, around about 2% growth. And hopefully we'll see the UK and European economies from what were relatively weak end of year levels of activity improving gradually, as the PMI suggests, as we go through 2020. Clearly the coronavirus has put a question mark over that outlook, and hence you've seen the moving markets over the last 72 hours.
It's one of the things that that you talked about, the uncertainty of last year. I mean, I hint that maybe that's been replaced by a greater sense of certainty this year, although you didn't say that. But I guess a lot of people are still looking at this and saying, well, you know, we still don't actually know what the UK's trading relationship with the EU is going to be. I mean, maybe it wasn't a sort of sudden no deal, but it might end up being something not very different from no deal. But do you think that businesses are more comfortable, that the economy is more comfortable about that future relationship?
There are clear risks to the UK outlook. You know, we think there will be a deal. It may not be as deep and as meaningful as perhaps some were hoping for 12 months ago. But
yeah.
I think the fact that you've actually got a stable government in place that can pass legislation if it desires to bring it to the House is helpful. I think the other thing that has significantly changed over the last year or two is the approach of the government to fiscal policy. So we're hearing much less about austerity. We're now hearing much more about infrastructure spending, and yet more spending.
Yeah.
And probably not raising taxes to cover that. So I think that also helps. So you've got a climate that's looking more business friendly, stable government, more fiscal spending. You've got, at least for now, the concerns of a hard Brexit allayed, if not completely disappeared, and that is all helpful. So some of the projects that were put off during 2019 will be brought on stream in 2020. That was what we were thinking in terms of our forecast. Clearly, as always, we forecast. It is just that, a forecast. An event, dear boy, another old saying.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about that then, the potential change in fiscal policy. Obviously, a new chancellor, plenty of conspiracy stories about how much that is designed to engineer an even more fiscally expansive agenda. Now, is that something that you see just feeding through into growth, or is it going to feed into inflation, in which case it's not necessarily going to feed through into growth?
Yeah. I'll leave the conspiracy theories to others, but yeah. Clearly there is a mood in government to spend money. Now the question is, what are they going to spend that money on? And for that, I look at the Prime Minister's advisor, Dominic Cummings. Now, he's referenced a number of research articles which would suggest that he favours trying to effectively improve the regional sectors of the UK economy, so trying to level up or boost the north in simple terms. How does he does that? How does he go about that? He's looked at places like Cambridge and Oxford, I think it's Imperial in London, Warwick, Sheffield to an extent. These are universities which are effectively monetizing their research. So he wants universities to become centres of excellence that are focused on serving business. So building up tech sectors in the regions, improving infrastructure. So obviously HS2 looks like it's going to get the go ahead. Remember, Cummings was also behind GOES reforms of 4 or 5 years ago. So trying to improve education per se, that's more business friendly. So these things potentially add to the growth of the UK economy without necessarily being inflationary. If you're improving supply side in economic speak, by the ability to produce more goods, the economy can grow faster and it won't generate inflation. Now, there are concerns. When you think about a fiscal stimulus at this time of the economic cycle, most economists would say you increase spending when growth is low and unemployment is high. Clearly, at the moment in the UK, unemployment is not high. So the argument is, if you're going to increase spending, where are you going to get the extra workers from? Does the extra spending go into a productive good, i.e. an output you can see, or does it just go into higher wages? If it goes into higher wages, that's perhaps when you're thinking about a more inflationary outcome than if you're seeing improved output of goods and services.
And that's not necessary. I mean, higher wages for public servants might not necessarily be completely against the interests of this new breed of Conservative government.
Higher real wages is always a vote winner at the end of the day. It may not do much for the UK economy per se, but it does help the ruling political party of the day. But they do want to change policy from what you've seen over the last 5 to 10 years. I think that is clear. They do regard there needs to be a break in, if you like, attitude towards government provision. What they actually do use the money for and how they actually do get it into the regions, we will have to wait and see. But a number of these projects are going to take years to come to fruition. It's all very well and good to talk about building a line between London and Birmingham. It takes a long time to build that line. So not all the spending will be felt initially. And with the level of unemployment as it is, it does raise questions about wages and whether there is enough labour in the UK to actually deliver some of the projects talked about.
Which brings us on to the other thing that they've unveiled, which is a new immigration policy. So I guess you've got a few things going on here. We've got more spending to the extent that goes into the NHS. It may very well raise wages. We've got a budget coming up and we've got national living wage, which seems to be on an increasing trajectory. And then you've got these other points that we've just talked about. So is the market overly complacent about what could be a more inflationary outlook going forwards? Because as I think you started off by saying, generally that there's a perception that policy needs to be sort of fighting deflation, whereas in the past there's always been inflation that's the enemy.
I think we need to realise, just taking a step back, inflation, or what causes inflation, seems to have changed. In the old days, if you took me sat here 5 years ago and you said, right, unemployment's going to fall, I would say to you, well, wages will therefore go up and we get higher inflation. We've had the fall in unemployment. We've had a very, very small rise in wages. And we've certainly not seen higher inflation. You can talk about that globally or just on the UK point of view. So there is a change in the inflation dynamic. Why? Is it something to do with the internet, the disruption of business models? Is it something to do with the fact that we can now source more of our goods from abroad? Is it the fact there's less unionisation of the workforce? These are all factors, but none of them really give us the answers why inflation has been, relatively speaking, low compared to where we've expected unemployment at generation lows. So the question is, if we spend more money and if we do have a change in immigration policy, does that limit the supply of labour or does that push up the price of labour effectively? And the jury's out on that one. I think we need to see more details of the proposed policy. We also need to see how it's going to actually operate in practice. Will higher wages attract more people in? Or will more spending, more jobs attract people in and keep wages more muted? Let's see.
Okay, finally then, as we look forward to the budget in a couple of weeks, you've referred a bit to the kind of fiscal agenda. I mean, it's still a government that's 1 year into its, at the very beginning of its term. That's normally a time to tighten the belt with the idea of some giveaways a bit later. But if you're doing infrastructure, as you said, you kind of need to start the sooner the better so that the benefits are being felt. And we don't really know what what the fiscal constraints are going to be for this government. So is this going to be a budget that could actually be really quite surprising for the market and for government bond investors? Or is it going to be a bit more predictable, as is normally the case?
I'm expecting a budget of change. I am expecting some big announcements on some of the government's pet projects, be it IT, be it infrastructure, be it the northern regions. Remember, they have got to, I use the word carefully, reward the voters for returning all these northern Tories, and they will want to be re-elected in 5 years' time.
Yeah.
So I think the government still needs to earn the trust of those voters, and the way to earn that trust is to announce some big projects in the budget. I may be disappointed. How much of that actually impacts the gilt market? Remember, we're still set by the global interest rate. So global bond markets will dominate the UK overall picture. But we could see some more spending. It could mean that perhaps the Bank of England will think we can leave interest rates where they are because there's going to be more fiscal spending to support the economy going forward. So that's potentially something the gilt market may need to think about.
So what you're saying is that the Treasury could be quite ambitious, and the fact that we're locked into this global interest rate market could keep yields quite well constrained, could keep borrowing costs quite well constrained, despite having quite an expensive policy.
I think that's the case. I think you should see gilts underperform. But is it going to be significant? I would be very surprised if it was. But at the end of the day, this is a world that is searching for yield, and gilts are still a good investment on the world stage. Backed by HM government, able to print your own currency, floating exchange rate. So you control your own economic policy. And in bond investors' eyes, that is still an attractive combination.
All right, well, there you have it. So a magic money tree ready to be harvested. Okay, well, David, thank you very much for spending some time going through that with us. And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to another Bruin podcast. Make sure you subscribe and join us again next time.